We're back with another exciting week here at Dan's Dabble in Babble. I have to say, I always start by claiming that this is an exciting week, and you know, we'll just have to wait and see where this episode goes, I guess. I am recording this earlier in the morning than I typically do, but I'm feeling energized. The difficult thing about doing a solo podcast like this, though, is there's really no chance. I have a cup of coffee on my left here, hot black, of course, but there's not really a moment where I can stop and take a sip. So that's going to be a challenge that we'll figure out this episode, is how to get the coffee to continue flowing and keep the babble flowing as well. So much flow early in this episode. I've had a really nice weekend. I really like recording this show on Sundays. It's kind of cathartic before a new work week to be able to just kind of talk extemporaneously about, you know, whatever I've got going on that I feel is podcast worthy. I am recording this. I like I said, had a nice weekend. It was a busier weekend than I initially anticipated that it would be, all for mostly good reasons. And anyway, I also this week discovered that there is a new season of something I discovered last year that became an absolute obsession of mine, and I am so glad that it's back and the format is exactly the same. We have the same host. The host is Jesse Palmer, which is just, you know, when you want a non-threatening generic white guy to host something, Jesse Palmer is the first person that you dial in. Like, don't get me wrong, I love me some Jesse Palmer. That is not a dig. Back when I was in grad school, I would watch a lot of Good Morning America, and he was a correspondent, I guess, would be his title for Good Morning America, and just they would give him the most random stories, and I always loved a good Jesse Palmer moment on Good Morning America. So don't misconstrue. I'm amped at the Jesse Palmer connection too. And speaking of grad school, I'm just kind of serving major. I've got a big term paper due in 12 hours, and I'm in the final throes. Kind of a little unkempt right now. Hair is a mess. Just sitting on the bed with a laptop. Luckily not writing a term paper, but providing a podcast for all of you. So thank you as always for listening. But the show that I'm referring to is the Holiday Baking Championship. And so I used to be a subscriber of Sling TV. I am no longer a subscriber of Sling TV. And that's a story for another day. Just one of the most absurd customer experience situations that I've ever had. And I am someone that I will be very loyal as far as you. If you are giving me good customer service and you are serving me well with your customer service department, I will be loyal to a fault. That's kind of general. Character flaw of mine is loyalty to a fault. You know, just this guy loves to be loyal. It's one of my favorite things to do. I mean, why would you not want to be loyal? As soon as I have a bad customer service experience, especially if it's with a company that I have any sort of, in my mind, relationship with, dead to me, scorched earth. Another one of my character flaws is I really love to go scorched earth when things go south. So luckily, I try to avoid from going south in that regard. Anyway, I discovered that there is a new season of Holiday Baking Championship. And so last year it was seriously, I mean, they would show marathons. I would get caught up. Just spend hours of my time watching Holiday Baking Championship. Now, a lot of you are probably thinking, well, what about Great British Baking Show? I love Great British Bake Off as well. I am not caught up on this season. I've watched the first episode and the cast, the first episode didn't really sink in. I hear lots of great things. Eventually I'm going to get there. But what I love about Holiday Baking Championship is it's a very similar concept, except they're not in a tent, they're in a studio. It's all holiday themed, but you know, it starts in November before Thanksgiving. So you kind of progress from fall themed and kind of Thanksgiving themed desserts to eventually you get to the more traditional winter holiday Christmas desserts and the like. So it's a really exciting competition to watch, and it feels like a long competition, and it's there's no better way to get in the holiday spirit. But whereas the Great British Baking Show has three rounds of competition, each episode of Holiday Baking Championship has two, and in the middle of the second challenge they will have a twist where they will announce some ingredient that has to be incorporated after the bakers are an hour or two into the competition. So it's really just a great twist, and it's got enough of the collegiality of Great British Baking Show, but enough of the biting American reality that people do take it high stakes. And it is higher stakes than Great British Baking Show on Holiday Baking Championship. It's either $25,000 or $50,000 that you win if you win the competition. So there is some money involved. But luckily I paid for a month of Discovery Plus that'll get me through to the finale of Holiday Baking Championship. Best $5 that I've spent in a while, I have to say. And so this is all a roundabout way of me saying that this morning I discovered a show that's 3 years old. Recently I heard one of the hosts of the show give an interview, and I was like, I had no idea that they had a show on HGTV. It's called Nate and Jeremiah Save My House. It's got Nate Berkus and Jeremiah Brent, which are just such, it's so refreshing to see a gay couple like this on TV. They kind of have the Chip and Joanna effect of where you see their relationship on the show as well. They're raising a daughter together. In the first episode, they're moving from LA to New York, and they're talking about the stress of a move. And now this is like the first time I think that they really have kind of combined their careers and are working together, but are loving it. And it's just really nice. So that's just kind of warmed my heart. It just feels very like we're getting into the holiday season, good vibes with a great holiday. Well, yeah, combining titles there with the Holiday Baking Championship, and then also the warmth of Nate Berkus and Jeremiah Brent giving home design tips and helping people who are kind of disasters that have taken on renovations that have gone south. So it's a pretty typical HGTV formula. The other thing I'll say about the Holiday Baking Championship is each episode is an hour and 20 minutes long. So it is just so much content that we are blessed with. And it's really the right amount of time. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, it's easy to take a break from if you're in the middle and you've got stuff to do. But it's definitely worth the watch. So if you have access, it's on the Food Network. But then it's also available on Discovery Plus, and I'm sure other streaming platforms may have access to it. Don't really know all of the details there, but definitely worth the watch. But now it's time to transition into the main topic of the episode, and I think a transition is a perfect time for you all to indulge me in a nice sip of coffee. And this would be a perfect time to talk about a coffee sponsorship, if anybody that sells coffee would like to reach out and figure out how to advertise on Dan's Dabble and Babble. You can do so by reaching out to me on my Twitter at BabblingDan or on my Instagram at Daniel Burkett. There's also a way to contact me through Anchor, the platform that I host my podcast through, and that is in... That information is in the show notes, or the description, link in description, all of that. all of that jazz. But something else happened this weekend, and that was the release of Red Taylor's version. And, you know, okay. For the longest time, I described myself as a reluctant Swiftie because I really was not a big Taylor Swift fan at all. Certainly not a Swiftie, but, you know, her songs that would become popular would kind of find their way into my ethos. I can respect a bop that comes through. And so sometimes that would lead me to deeper dives on certain albums. So like 1989, that's the Wildest Dreams era. I know Welcome to New York, which is actually a song that I hate, but Out of the Woods was my favorite song on that album. But the songs were so good that I liked from the album that it led me to the album itself. And other eras of Taylor Swift have not had as strong of an impact. But I'm kind of now at a point where I am going back and getting into different eras of Taylor Swift. And what really solidified my status as a Swiftie was the album Evermore. So I know a lot of people were obsessed with Folklore. I still have not listened to Folklore all the way through. The first time I was listening to Folklore, I just found it really boring. I thought a lot of the songs had a similar vibe. I don't know that that's still a fair interpretation of Folklore, but Evermore, I just, for whatever reason, it really captivated me, and it was all I could listen to for a while. And so that has kind of led me to revisit certain eras of Taylor Swift. And, you know, so my experience with Taylor Swift is, you know, there was the first album with Teardrops on My Guitar, our song Picture to Burn, you know, where she came on the scene and you know, who was not paying attention to Taylor Swift when she was dropping the Teardrops on My Guitar, and, you know, Tim McGraw, all of these wonderful songs. But, you know, as far as lasting impact, it's like there's some of those fun songs. I believe it's one thing that bothers me is I think it's in Picture to Burn. She has a line that says, "You can tell your friends that I'm stupid and obsessive. That's fine. I'll tell mine you're gay." They have changed that lyric, and it's now, I don't even know what it is. I think it's like, "And by the way," or something. But I mean, I just think it's so, she was 15 when she wrote that song. And I think it is important to recognize that there are still high schoolers that say dumb things. And it is, you know, it's in the embarrassment of a breakup when you're 15, you're not going to handle things the most maturely, and you're going to say things that are stupid and come up with reasons. And, you know, it's also, you know, maybe the kid was gay. Maybe that's why it didn't work out. Who knows? I mean, enough time has passed that I'm sure she can go back and talk to that. That's not where I was intending to go with this at all. So the album Fearless was her second album. And that was an album I got for Christmas one year. Let me look up the original release date of Fearless so I can let you know exactly how old I was when I got that. But it was really given to me as an excuse because my mom, I think, wanted access to the album. So it came out November of 2008. So I was 16. I was a sophomore in high school when I got the Fearless album by Taylor Swift, and I absolutely loved it. And, you know, at this point I was a closeted gay man. So a lot of the songs just, you know, had some interesting implications. You know, it's talking of course about, you know, having crushes on men and all of that. And you know, the re-release of Fearless, Taylor's version, earlier in the year, I just really, again, went back, and it was an interesting experience, you know, having, so I really loved this album. Forever and Always is an amazing song. I really love the title track, Fearless. Just talking about meeting somebody and then just being so overwhelmed and so into them, that, you know, it kind of forces you to just step outside of yourself and be a better version of yourself. And, you know, finding that, by having the support and the strength of that new relationship, I think is just a really sweet sentiment. And, you know, it was one thing to be listening to these songs as a closeted 16-year-old, but with really no experience in romance, and then coming back and listening to the re-release of Taylor's version, and you know, it was released. I was and am in a relationship now, and you know, just I think there's so many of these songs are resonant with me, but really none more so than Fearless, to be quite honest. But then also the song Forever and Always, I think, really has a lot of just great lyrics, that really, you know, in the beginning of a relationship, when you're in that period where, you know, I am the king of overthinking. I love to overthink everything. It's the bridge of, you know, I stare at the phone, he still hasn't called, and then you feel so low you can't feel nothing at all. It's like going on, it's when these moments pass early on and you're just like, oh, did I say something? Was I out of line? Did I say something way too honest to make you run and hide? I looked into your eyes, thought I knew you for a minute, but now I'm not so sure. And so here's to everything coming down to nothing. Here's the silence that cuts me to the core. And, you know, I think in the mindset of this was of how this was being written, I think it can be, you know, if it is a relationship that has gone south, that, you know, you're reflecting on the best times of the relationship and, you know, putting yourself out there. But I take this as just those moments early on when you're just so overwhelmed and so attuned to every little move you make. And then, you know, as the relationship develops and matures, you're less worried about, you know, the minutiae of the conversation, the minutiae of every little action, because, you know, you have the comfort that and the ebbs and flows with the person, that, you know, that you can kind of tell what is an intentional slight versus what's not, and it develops into a more meaningful and deep mode of communication. But, you know, all of this is to say is that going back and kind of as a 28-year-old when it was released, re-released, and kind of reflecting back on those emotions that I had as a 16-year-old that, you know, at that point never thought that I would come out of the closet, never thought that I would be brave enough. And then to kind of revisit those emotions and revisit those feelings, like having those relationships. I mean, the other song on that album that I think is just so cute is Hey Steven, and the great lyric is, you know, all those other girls, yeah, they're beautiful, but would they write a song for you? And I just think that is, you know, it's obviously so specific to Taylor, but it's also something that, you know, when you're in that relationship and you're so into someone, and, you know, they captivate every thought that you have, you know, there's a point, especially kind of when you're in that bubbly infatuation phase, that it's like, you know, everything you do is kind of oriented toward that person that you feel so strongly about. The way you walk, the way you talk when you say my name, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. Don't you ever change. And it's like, you know, you do want to have those moments. And I think, those moments do persist. But are maybe not quite as strong and pronounced as, you know, when you have that initial infatuation and those butterflies. But those other girls, they're beautiful. But would they write a song for you? It's like, yeah, you know, listen, there's lots of fish in the sea, but there's only one thing that I can do for you, that makes this work. And I really do kind of love the notion of like, this is what I can do for you. Because ultimately, you know, there's an infatuation of like when someone is treating you well and wants to do things for you, it's really special to have that attention. But I think there's also a shift when it's, you know, you move beyond just, you know, wanting to do something for someone to get that next date or to get to the next step, whatever it is. But when you genuinely are like, you know, this is I'm in your life, and this is how I can enhance your life, and I want to do these things for you, and I want to support you in this way, I think that's a really special and an important component in this as well. So, that's the Fearless Taylor's version. But of course, we just had the re-release of Red Taylor's version, and this album was something that I realized I was way less familiar with than I had initially thought. You know, I really only knew well the songs on here: Red, 22, I Knew You Were Trouble, and We Are Never Getting Back Together. And so this was kind of the era where, you know, people freaked out about Taylor Swift no longer being a country artist and going into a much more commercial aspect. And I just remember she had a Diet Coke ad in this era where she was sitting on her bed and she was kind of writing the lyrics to 22. And so, you know, it's I will say that the whole notion of Red is that there's a lot of you know, it's really a breakup album. There is a lot of great lyrics when you're going through it about just, you know, the passion is gone, the perception at the beginning versus the perception now that everything has changed. It's just not, so it's hard for me to connect with this album deeply, because that's just not where I am. And I think that's the interesting thing about these re-releases of Taylor's version is, you know, I love the reproduction of a lot of these songs. I really noticed it in the Fearless album. It's just, I think she just, compared to 2008 versus now, I think she's just learned so much as an artist and a producer and all of that, that the songs were just a lot sharper. I think by the time she had Red, the team that was working on Red kind of had that figured out. So I don't notice as many just necessarily improvements on a lot of the songs. There are a lot of great songs from the vault that were released with this re-release. I do want to talk about the song 22, because I think 22 is often written off as just kind of a trivial song about, you know, that's taken too literally sometimes. And it's especially because it was released in the context of, wow, Taylor Swift is so commercial now, I don't think it was really taken seriously by most people. So this was originally released in 2012, and I need another sip of coffee. But, you know, now having the perspective, so in 2012, I would have been, that was the year that I turned 20. So I was not yet 22. You know, how should I say? So I think it's often taken very literally, this song. But you know, there's a lot of meaning here, because I think, you know, what does it mean to be 22? And you know, so 22, when I was 22, I was in my senior year of college, and you know, I was very stressed with a lot of things my senior year of college. Like most seniors in college are going to be stressed with, you know, I was figuring out what my next move was going to be. I had a lot of people pushing me toward the grad school thing. I had had an internship in Cleveland that I absolutely loved, and was actively kind of pursuing a full-time position with that company as well, and keeping my options open for other companies. So, you know, constantly dealing with my workload and deadlines as a chemistry major, a cheerleader that year, and taking on all, you know, all sorts of responsibilities. You know, when people kind of talk about college being totally carefree, in so many ways it is, because you know, the things that you stress about are luxuries for those to be your biggest stresses. And I think that's a perspective and an appreciation that you don't have until that's gone. I still firmly believe, like, the whole those are the best 4 years of your life. I think that's a dismal outlook. You know, my entire philosophy is that you should always be aiming for better and better years. And you know, that certainly rings true for my life. But that's not to say, I mean, I had a great 4 years in college. But you know, it is with all of those stresses, recognizing that you can just kind of disconnect. So let me find the lyrics here. One moment here. So here's the lyric that I'm talking about. We're happy, free, confused, and lonely at the same time. It's miserable and magical. Tonight's the night when we forget about the deadlines. It's time. And it's so easy to do that, because you know, that is your vibe at 22, is, you know, you've got these things that you are dealing with. You've got responsibilities that you need to figure out. But you also have the luxury that you can forget about the deadlines, and everything will be all right if you keep me next to you. You don't know about me, but I bet you want to. Everything will be all right if we just keep dancing like we're 22. And I think that's really powerful, because now it's, you know, you gotta have those nights well beyond 22. You know, it feels like the perfect night to dress up like hipsters and make fun of our exes. You know, again, not exactly the vibe that I'm at in my life, but you know, I'm down for dressing up like a hipster and just going out and having a good time. Tonight's the night when we forget about the deadlines. Already did that. Feels like a perfect night for breakfast at midnight. You know, sometimes it's just you gotta connect and be carefree, like you are when you're 22, and you know, to be able to recognize that yes, you've got all of these responsibilities, but it's also important to disconnect and feel just dance like you're 22. I think the other song on the album that I've always really loved musically, but I think really falls short in a rare miss in Taylor Swift's metaphors, is the song "Red." And it's just I don't know what this song is supposed to mean. And I mean, I do. Let's work through this a little bit together. And so I'm gonna do a deep cut into the Red lyrics, because it's I just I it's something that I've spent a long time trying to understand. So starts loving him is like driving a new Maserati down a dead end street. Okay, so loving him is like driving a new Maserati. So new Maserati, you want to go fast. It's super exciting, but it's down a dead end street. So you don't go very far. And, you know, you don't control the street. I mean, I guess you can control the street that you're on. So again, the breakdown of the metaphor there, but you don't control where the street ends. So the ride is cut short abruptly because of a decision that you haven't really had the chance to make. Faster than the wind, passionate as sin, ending so suddenly. Okay, so again, that initial excitement and passion, but then it's just gone. Loving him is like trying to change your mind once you're already flying through the free fall. That to me doesn't make sense. I mean, like when you're flying through the free fall, you make the decision to go into the free fall. And then once you're falling, like the colors in autumn so bright just before they lose it all. Again, it's like, okay, so the trying to change your mind in the free fall, but in the free fall, you're still actively falling. The excitement is still happening. So that seems like a disparate metaphor. And then like the colors in autumn so bright just before they lose it all. I mean, okay, right. So the trees get very vibrant and then they lose everything, but that's also just part of the growth cycle of the tree, and the leaves come back. I mean, I guess they are new leaves, so maybe it's that's a metaphor for a new relationship. But again, I'm just really trying to work this out, and I think I've thought a lot about it, but I've never talked through it, so bear with me. Losing him was blue like I'd never known. Okay, obvious. That's straightforward. Missing him was dark gray, all alone. Okay, definitely. Like when you lose somebody and then you miss them, it's very isolating. Forgetting him was like trying to know somebody you never met. That is a lyric that I can't wrap my mind around. Maybe I'm just dumb. Tweet at me at Babbling Dan if you can explain. Forgetting him was like trying to know somebody you never met, but loving him was red. But loving him was red. So, okay, so red is the color of passion. All right, so where has that love gone? And so what's the point? Okay, touching him was like realizing all you ever wanted was right there in front of you. All right, so that's a very relatable feeling, but now it's okay, so we're in a simile because we've got a comparison with like. So touching him was like realizing all you ever wanted was right there in front of you. All right. So you're with this person and it's like, oh, right. Yes, I get it. This is what I want. And you know, I, that is certainly an experience that when you have it, it's like, yes, this works. Okay. Memorizing him was as easy as knowing all the words to your old favorite song. All right. So it's just natural. It's easy. It connects. Fighting with him was like trying to solve a crossword and realizing there's no right answer. Okay, so that to me says that in this relationship, you know, okay, fighting with a crossword that there's no right answer. So to me, that's almost like, what are you fighting about? Because to me, that's almost like you're fighting over nothing. The fight's not real. Regretting him was like wishing you never found out that love could be that strong. But why the regret? Why the regret? That's like if loving him was red and it's so passionate and it was so easy and all of that, what's the regret? Is the regret that it ended? And, you know, why did it end? If all of these things were so connected, is it just like another kind of young being 22 and just like mistaking these exciting emotions for a deeper feeling? I don't know. Okay, so then we're back to losing him was blue like I'd never known. Missing him was dark gray, all alone. Forgetting him was like trying to know somebody you never met. But loving him was red. Oh, red, burning red. Remembering him comes in flashbacks and echoes. Tell myself it's time now. Gotta let it go. Okay. Remembering him comes in. Okay, so that, like, when you're trying to get somebody, it's like, yeah, there'll be things that remind you. And that goes, and you know, but to me, this is like, I've had, there are things that will remind me of an ex, and it's like, but never any of my exes, I would never describe it in terms of loving them was red, because it's just like, you know, the reasons why it ended up not working out were there from the beginning. And maybe that is, you know, I'm older than Taylor was when she wrote this song. So maybe that is more of an experience thing where it's like, yeah, no, it's, I'm not romanticizing the relationships that have failed in any way. You know, you can appreciate the good things about them for what they were, but also like I don't, I mean, they ended and they ended. And they ended for a reason. So, okay, tell myself it's time now, gotta let it go. But moving on from him is impossible when I still see it all in my head and burning red. Loving him was red. Okay, so she is still feeling that passion for somebody, but I want to know why did it not work out? There's a lot of context, I think, and mixed metaphors here that there's not enough. Losing him was blue, like I'd never known. Missing him was dark gray, all alone. Forgetting him was like trying to know somebody you never met, 'cause loving him was red. And that's why he's spinning round in my head, comes back to me, red, red, burning red. His love was like driving a new Maserati down a dead-end street. Okay, so there's just, I think, a lot of context missing from this song, and I just don't know that I can connect. I don't know that I can fully understand it, and I just try so hard because it's such a fun song to listen to. It's such a fun song to sing to, but it means nothing. I don't think it has deep meaning. And Taylor Swift songs usually are just dripping in meaning. So I don't know. That's, you know, this has been a lot of Taylor Swift talk, and it's been fun. And I thank you for listening. I do want to just, you know, the album that I revisited, that is my favorite Taylor Swift album, is the album Lover. And I think, so this was the song that has me. And you need to calm down. So it was like very memed out of existence, I think. But the song Lover itself is wonderful. But also, I Think He Knows is perhaps my favorite Taylor Swift song. And it's just it's like the whole concept of Lover, and maybe I it's really resonant in my life right now. The whole hook, he got that boyish look that I like in a man. I am an architect, I'm drawing up the plans. It's like I'm 17, nobody understands. No one understands. It's just like, yeah, when again, that initial attraction of like figuring out getting in this relationship that's working, and it's just like, God, I'm so obsessed with this, and just you couldn't understand. But then, he got the boyish look that I like in a man. I am an architect. I'm drawing of the plans. He's so obsessed with me. And boy, I understand. Boy, I understand. It's like, yeah, it's like kind of stepping into that ownership of the relationship. And it's like, I'm obsessed with him, but he's obsessed with me too. And I completely understand it. And anyway, so I love that song. Then also, London Boy is just such a cute song. Dating an Anglo boy myself right now, I like it. False God, I think, is also just incredible. Anyway, this is just turning me into being like, I like it, and just, you know, thinking about my guy and smiling. So with that, I think I will let you go. Thank you for joining me. I also want to say that the song All Too Well, which is on Red, was is something that people just talk about as like the quintessential Taylor Swift song, which I think is why the Red era is so memorable for so many people. Is, you know, All Too Well is it's a very lyrically meaningful song. Again, not something that I necessarily connect with, but she released this 10-minute version that people were obsessed with the fact that it was going to be 10 minutes. I listened to it once and I was surprised at how much I liked it, to be totally honest. All of that is to say that you know, Taylor's killing it. It's been fun to give you some of my thoughts on Taylor Swift this week. I hope you have a great week, and just keep on babbling. Just babble on, folks, babble on.